Boys Lunch.
Here we go.
And welcome back.
It's Boys Lunch.
Yes.
That excitement is natural because it is homecoming week here at Central Catholic and we are just pumped.
What?
The senior class is going to have to come from behind to win, but it is still mathematically possible. Will they call it a comeback? Yes. Are we way behind? For sure. Could we still win? We'll find out.
But they're winning on the fun level. Actually, I don't know. Anyway, it is the Wednesday of homecoming week, and we are happy to be here. We are Joe and Paul, Boys Lunch.
Two Catholic teachers talking about life. And as always, you can email us at boyslunch1@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram at Boys Lunch Podcast. We appreciate the influx of new listeners or visitors to the podcast. If you are listening to our first ones, we apologize again for the audio quality, but trust me, it gets better. So hang on.
You think people are just visiting like the page and not actually listening?
Yeah, exactly.
They might be.
For like 10 seconds. Like, bah! I feel bad for Mr. Colgrove, who started from the beginning.
Like, ah. Yeah.
Good luck, but good on you for listening. Appreciate him. How you been?
Been pretty good. You know, we did have about a 3-week break, I feel like, between our podcasts. And we were getting good numbers before that break. And then our last podcast last week, I mean, where are you people at?
Consistency.
Make sure you hit some kind of follow button so you can get some notifications. Because we're not as consistent, it helps. It'll pop up on your phone.
Yes, absolutely. And I don't want to blame Scott Vogel for making that announcement after you had left because of the birth of your child,
right.
But it's Scott Vogel's fault. Though, Scott, if you wanted to do it again, I don't know, a week or two.
No, it's something that we say around like school. Like, he really Vogeled it. You know, like, I taught both of his sons, and, you know, just something that was just... It's like, I didn't even blame them because I knew. That
right, exactly.
Apples
didn't fall far from the tree.
Exactly.
The tall, tall tree that is Scott Vogel. So, Scott, we appreciate you, though. Next time you mow your lawn, you'll be listening to this, and we love you.
You're great.
How are you feeling this homecoming week? You are no longer an advisor.
I feel free. It's been really good just to kind of observe and watch everyone enjoy it.
I want to run that back.
I love doing it, and I still I love getting involved in that stuff. I'm looking forward to doing stuff like that in the future. But, you know, it came at the right time.
It's good to take a year off, and yes,
I definitely would have been my mental health would not have been great this week. Just everything going on at home, and like we had our sophomore retreat last week. We have our freshman retreat next week. So there's like a lot of responsibilities at this time. So it's kind of good to take a step back and let other people do it. And it's cool to see these other teachers coming in and stepping up and be able to do it. So
yeah, I think you've shown some good reflection on who you are as a person and the type of person as you get involved in these things. You're just a competitive person.
Yeah.
And it's tough for you to kind of let it go. I am happy, on the other hand, to captain a sinking ship. And just
you're able to teach a lot of life lessons better.
Exactly. Some people might call it lazy, other people might be just putting the responsibility on the students themselves, but we're having fun with it.
I was more of a helicopter advisor.
Yeah, I mean, and you're correct, it, in some ways, like, they become over reliant on the advisors, and you're here like 7 days a week and you're getting here early in the morning to get the perfect shot for the video. Mm-hmm. Definitely seniors, we're putting more on them, and I think it's been for the better of our mental health, that's for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, so then I think maybe some of the more underclassmen are having fun this week.
Yeah,
seniors are a little demoralized right now, but there's still a lot of the week left.
Still a chance.
Yeah.
I will say the underclassmen have put in a lot of good work. Mm-hmm. They're having a lot of fun. And kudos to all those advisors who have been supporting them. So
for sure.
There is a buzz about Central Catholic.
Anything going on?
Anything going on here? No. It is a busy time of year, especially for you, because you're involved in both retreats. But last week was fun to have it was fun in many ways to have the sophomores out at Lake Bloomington for the sophomore retreat. I did get to meet some great individuals.
We did. We were Original Sin was just like really presented to us on the sophomore retreat. Concupiscence.
Yeah.
Like, those doctrines are really present.
You know, sometimes it's like, man, you see maybe a house by the lake and that is a boathouse. And you're like, can I climb that? And most of us would be like, it's unnecessary. But a sophomore boy is going to say, yeah, I can climb that.
It was, we had a good day and we made the most of our experience. And it was cool to get to know some of those guys. We had a fun football game. That's probably my favorite part.
Yeah.
they were like trash talking, like Corpus versus Epiphany, and then Epiphany ended up taking everyone else, like the St. Mary's crew, someone from Hayward. But I guess a joke, like they're able to mix well, but it was funny to do like a Corpus versus Epiphany football game.
It is amazing how even how heated a touch football game can get, especially when it's drawn along.
But it's also like in a funny, healthy way. It wasn't like, no, like.
No, so that was but fun. It's just like, you could tell like people really wanted to win, but everyone was smiling. Other than that, new things. My wife and I, Mary, got to spend a wonderful evening in Rockford, Illinois. We got to see a comedy show, go out to eat. That was nice. So shout out to Janet and Mark Rayburn for watching our girls.
Yeah, that's cool.
And yeah, it was great. It was great to get away. We had a lot of fun. How about you? Anything new in your life?
What I have in the notes, Raider Farm is lit.
just love your small talk notes.
I was like, I was just trying to remember. If I don't write things down, I forget what I've done.
That's true.
Went to Raider Farm. That was fun with the boys. And just, yeah, adjusting. It's been nice. Sella's mom, my wife's mom, was here the past week. So it was fun being able to spend time with her. And that was, yeah. And then we got to see her brother and his girlfriend came and visited. So
nice.
Had some good visitors. Yeah, it's been fun.
What's your favorite thing at Raider Farms? Raider Farms?
They have a new obstacle course.
They have an obstacle course
now? That's legit.
Nice. Are you one that jumps on that giant inflatable bouncy thing?
Dude, I look like an idiot up there.
You're up there, though?
It is slippery.
See, that's like a torn ACL waiting to happen.
I didn't jump. I'm just...
That's good.
Damien's a little wild, my three-year-old. So it's more just supervising.
You're doing security.
Yeah, security.
Did you do the apple gun?
No, I wasn't up in there.
Our apple cannon?
A lot of fun things there. So the fall vibes are in the air. It is delightful.
So Raider Farms, if you want to cut us a check, we are happy to do this ad read anytime. Sweet. Do we have any connections? We do, isn't one former family is involved in Raider Farms. I can't remember the last name. Feel bad.
I've been running into a lot of people though. So yeah, shout out to my brother-in-law Miguel, faithful listener, his girlfriend Jessica,
who also listens.
And Jessica showed this podcast to her friend who has no idea who we are. Appreciate that, Jessica.
Yes. Way to pass the pod.
Spread the podcast. Appreciate that. I ran into Eli Davis. I didn't tell you this at Target.
Nice.
So former student, Elijah.
How's he doing?
He's doing well. Okay. What a freaking nerd though. Dude. So he's graduating in December with his degree in chemistry and then is going to pursue like some, I didn't even understand what he was saying. Some kind of molecular PhD.
I think he's already like published papers too. Like he's wicked smart.
Wicked smart. And like he just like had grown up so much. When I saw him, I'm like, who is this adult that is talking to me? Like, so cool to see Eli, more of a older former student.
Yeah.
I feel like we run into a lot of ones that have just graduated. Brooke Newmister, Annika Snyder came in.
Yes.
And saw us. They're coming to pick up the yearbooks, but they stopped by and talked to some of those teachers. That was nice. Yeah. I also ran into Annika that same night at Target. So it was a Friday night. She just goes, Friday night Target. So that's
funny. Target is probably the place I run into students the most.
Yeah.
But good for you for not doing the old dive into the aisle and just pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah.
You engaged the students. Good for you.
Yeah. Saw Owen Ritter. Did not talk to Owen Ritter. When we were in the hospital, I forgot to mention this. I just saw him walking out in his scrubs. The redhead with the purple scrubs just looked good.
He didn't come in and draw blood.
He did not. Yeah. Phlebotomist. Yeah.
Legend.
But yeah, it's been kind of cool running into people and just feeling those fall vibes, seeing family, people chipping in, helping out.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. While we're on the topic, we plugged the Austin and Owen's podcast last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts on the initial listen?
I mean, it's just like they're copying us, but other than that, it's cool, I guess.
Doing great though.
But no, I like it.
I'm just excited that they got Tyler Budd on there.
Yeah,
that's where it's at.
Anything else?
No, excited for the podcast.
Super excited for this podcast. You're gonna want to stay tuned because I have a special guest.
Our special guest is Fyodor Dostoevsky.
Fyodor, thanks for joining us today. Back from the dead.
Jeez. Woof. Okay, so as I was kind
I'm just glad you didn't do a Russian accent.
I'm not very good at accents, as you know.
You really do just
have I have accent. A very good Brooklyn accent.
That is it.
So anyway, I was thinking about themes that I wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And this is selfish because it's something that I'm passionate about. And that has been interesting to me the last year.
But I think we can benefit from it. I think it's good.
Yeah,
so don't be shy.
yeah. I mentioned before, I'm making my way through the book The Brothers Karamazov by Fyodor Dostoevsky, a Russian novelist from the mid-1800s. Like a classic of literature, especially Russian literature, that you have actually read the entire thing.
Yes.
I've read the first half. So
which is like 600 pages.
Which is like a lot.
That's just half. 600.
Yeah. And I have just been, there's a few things that I'm pulling from this, not necessarily from the plot itself that I'm going to get into, but mm-hmm. just like things that I've noticed as I've read it that I think apply to just the human life, the spiritual life that I'm hoping to kind of piece together. I would say this is a book that I would not have appreciated even in college as I was reading it. I don't think I was just ready for it. I think that's the case. I think we've talked about before, like I read Confessions in high school and I understood the narrative, but I did not get as much out of it as I did the second time, the third time, the fourth time I read it.
Right.
Because I just wasn't ready for it. And that's something maybe I want to get to a little bit later. But The Brothers K is it's a fascinating look into Russian culture, which I think is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've been interested in. Yeah. Just the soul of Russia that has been through so much, so many different regimes and governments, and almost that soul that the perseverance they have.
Yeah.
And almost like that balance of despair and hope and everything. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's something fascinating about Russian history with that.
Formed in those hard winters, that's for sure. And the trials, like, of, yeah, absolutely. Government takeover after loss. Or
it's almost like Poland, too. Like, some of these countries that have just gone through so much but are trying to hold on to what their soul.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating what is – it's like the diamond that is forged through that pressure and all these different things.
Yeah, and I think not that they care that much about the background, right? But you've got like an impression of large masses of people, either through the Soviet regime or before that, right? The czars, and just the way in which people were treated, not even having ownership of their own land and this type of thing. So there's, I think he quite beautifully brings out like, yeah, like you said, almost like what the heartbeat of that nation and how it's been forged in these trying times, but also there's quite some beauty in the way he portrays these characters, and you can see.
And even just like Europe in the 1800s,
yeah,
like post-Enlightenment, as they're just trying to figure their stuff out. Mm-hmm. But it is it is just an insight, I think, into original sin. It's his own commentary on humanity and our fallen nature and like trying to have grace break through. I believe,
yeah,
as you're reading it, I think it's him trying to work out his own life within this. And it's an interesting book because it's claimed by both Christians and atheists as like a triumph of writing about humanity, because both of them see, because in it, it's a plot about characters within a town and a family, but in it, like there are explicit arguments, you know, against and for God's existence. They discuss the problem of evil and death, the corruption of the church, whatever. And there's like these implicit battles that you see of humanity trying to like search and seek for God, right? Yeah. So like I think the atheists grasp onto arguments he makes against God's case, but then Christians will grasp on like the counter arguments or like the underlying theme of still some kind of triumph that might come. And obviously I'm only halfway through the book, but
right. And I think, yeah, and then Christians especially, and why this is maybe that they've grown to appreciate it more and more as the years go by, is like, yeah, they hold on to, despite the mess that this family is, like each one of them uniquely and together at moments, they find these flashes of hope amongst despair, the light amongst the darkness, mm-hmm. that yeah, just speak to people, and especially the uniqueness of each of the characters. People kind of typically gravitate towards one or the other because that's, you know, they find themselves in a similar situation. They did such a beautiful job of painting that picture. And I don't know, I think the setting of Russia itself and the hope that they find within that is beautiful and well.
I love the characters in the plot, and I'm never someone who says that. So like that was like something that was like eye-opening to me as I'm reading this book. Like I was just never someone that was like that. And the way that he was able to write this story, I think, was inspiring. The Karamazovs are just, there's a father, Fyodor, and he has three sons. Those are the main characters. One of them through his first wife, and the other two through his second or third wife. Actually, I don't remember which one it was,
yeah.
But they are all just like the incarnation of sensualists. They all have their struggles, and they call themselves like, we are Karamazovs. And like, that's their way of like describing themselves. We're all Karamazovs in some way. And there's even like this implication that all human beings have a Karamazov in them.
Yeah.
Like that temperament and or that tendency or that temptation. But I'm just going to go through like the four main characters really quick.
Yeah.
Just to like, I want to pull out bigger themes that will be applicable to our lives really quick after that. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Fyodor, the dad, is just the incarnation of lust, debauchery, drunkenness. He's a self-described buffoon. he is the one that's getting drunk in the bars and picks a fight with someone. It's just a very passionate, always acting on his whims, saying things he shouldn't say, playing the fool almost to get the attention, is not respectful to the people around him. It's very hard, like, keeping relationships. And then when he breaks up with his wives, he starts to call them crazy and blame them. He is completely absent and forgets about his kids, and his servants have to raise his children. Is that a good way to describe Fyodor?
Yeah, probably.
Just an absolute buffoon. The oldest son, Dmitri, is just the incarnation of wrath and vengefulness. Obviously, like, such a product of his upbringing and his own probably lack of relationship with his father. And just like that.
Like what he witnessed, what was taken from him, what he ought to have had, but has not.
Right.
Or the effect that his father's raising or lack thereof has had on him. You can see, there's
something. And just like a struggle with authentic masculinity. You can see, like, he just does not know what it means to be a man. And is like trying to work through these passions, but is doing it in such a vengeful way. His father manipulates him with money. He's not in a good relationship with him at all. And we actually end up finding out they're both pursuing the same woman that they are madly in love with.
Right.
Ivan is the middle child, classic middle child. He is more the intellectual atheist, the realist who has gotten out of the small town feel and has really figured out the world. So more of the, less of the Russian soul and more of the, like, European intellectual elites. So he has all the talking lines of someone at that point of the Enlightenment.
Or the perception he's got it figured out, right?
Right. So he's condescending at points, but he's also, you can tell that he's lost, he's hurt, his own rejection and trauma that he has in his life that he hasn't worked through. That he is putting himself out there and this woman is not accepting him. And as much as he wants to be that guy who is fine with humanity being wretched and evil, like, it is eating him up inside.
Yep.
And he is the one that's critiquing the church and critiquing God. But you can see there's, in everything he's saying, he is desperately hoping for an answer to to his own objections that he's bringing against God. Was that a good kind of
perfect
portrayal of him? And then the youngest, Alyosha, or Alexei, who's described at the beginning as the hero of the entire story. He's the protagonist. He is just the, I don't know, he's all things to all people from what I've seen so far. He is like the connecting person. He's the binding peacekeeper. He is, he's on his way to becoming a monk when we first meet him. He's being mentored by the great mystic priest of the town at the monastery. But he is the person, he's not giving into drunkenness, although he also doesn't judge Fyodor for being drunk all the time. He's always there for people. Which probably weighs on him as well. I'm sure there's people like that in their lives.
I think the way you'll see that there's a burden that carries because of the way that people perceive him.
Yes.
And that there is, he has his own struggles and demons that because of his upbringing and just the natural search of humanity for truth, like I think people think that and assume he's got it figured out and he's the lucky one. And I think there's a weight that he carries because of that, because of the reality of his own.
I can't wait to see what happens. But he even says that Dmitri, the oldest son, like I said, the vengeful angry one, is just like pouring his heart out in the story and of terrible things and just debased things that he did to Alyosha. And he's like, you wouldn't understand. And Alyosha's like, I think I am a Karamazov too. Like Dmitri's like, I'm an insect. I'm vile. I'm wretched. And Alyosha says, I'm no better than you. And this is a guy, he's wearing a cassock at the time, looking at him saying, I know you think you're crazy. You're doing all these things, but you might be on step 12 of the ladder. I'm on step one, but we're both still on that ladder.
Yeah.
But we're struggling with something, which I think, I don't know. If you read the book, for me, the first thing I thought of it, it reminds me of Augustine's Confessions, because it is just, it's tracing deep emotions of humanity that I don't think, like I was saying before, I don't think I could have appreciated when I was 17 because it was hard for me to understand what I was going through and what I was feeling. And I think as I grew up and you have more experiences and you start to learn how to work through them, something like this starts to speak to you more.
Yeah.
Augustine makes more sense because I understand the feelings he's going through, or at least I've seen that in other people. Like, I don't think I was ready for that as a high schooler because I wasn't able to understand or be as empathetic to other people. And I wasn't in tune with what was going on within me.
Yeah. And that's the key. I think when we're younger, sometimes we lack an awareness of what have I put a name to that emotion? What is that? Have I seen others deal with it? And so, I think that's you're correct to point out that it is just like a lack of awareness of, or how can I work with this emotion if I don't know what it is or what I'm supposed to do with it?
And that's like Dostoevsky, like the writer, the author himself went through a lot of vile, tough, trying times. I think his father was murdered. I think he was imprisoned, like all these different things. So
I was listening to someone, they were talking about like, it is sometimes the most vile people who are able to express and articulate like that side, like eloquently express that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it is so touching. I think that's why Augustine's confessions ring so true, is because it is such an honest confession of the reality of his life. Yeah. And that's why it just jumps off the page if you are ready for it. Mm-hmm. And that's like, I think the beauty of the knowledge that we can gain from literature, from the arts, from the humanities, like deep truths, as Augustine says, like men are a great deep, like we are, there's so much within us that that you wouldn't know through science, through math, through empirical observation. And like, there's just so much great truth within literature that, like, again, as a high schooler, get me to read Shakespeare and I hated every second of it. Like, this is bogus. And that's what like all our kids are saying too. But I think it's just such a naive outlook mm-hmm. on life.
Yeah, I love and have come to appreciate fiction because it mines the depths of humanity. And it, those people who, like Dostoevsky or others who write so eloquently, you relate to these characters and these stories because it feels as if they're going through it too, and you're able to kind of associate with that. And it's like, I don't know, it's like when you make a friend and they've had a similar life experience and there's that connection that's bound there, and then you have the ability to discuss. Mm-hmm. So too, when you're exposed to the depth and beauty in these characters and the battles and struggles, and if it's well written and it's compelling, there's something as a part of you that yearns to attach yourself to that and to explore it with them. And as you witness them sort it out, it allows you to have self-reflection. Oh, like, they ought not have done that, but I can see where the temptation is to do that, but I can see why I ought, this is the path that ought to be mm-hmm. trod, and that type of stuff, where you can kind of, there's something, even in fiction, like the genuine, like Augustine's saying, it's beautiful because it's a genuine heart, like it's essentially him pouring his heart out to us and sharing with us this confession. But even within fictional characters themselves, right, there's, though the character might be made up, it's from an author and from a real place. And those are experiences are ones that we can still share because you know that those are realities that people live day in and day out.
Because that's like, even this novel, it just seems like Dostoevsky is pouring out so much of his own struggles and his own questions and thoughts, even though it is fiction. And Augustine has a chapter about the theater, although he's critiquing people that abuse like the feelings, but why humans have always loved actors and movies and plays and books is because it helps us to experience the feelings that we're experiencing and have a hard time naming and understanding. Or even like, I'm not always able to experience grief in my life, but I can be empathetic and understand grief within a movie. Like, that's why we're going to these things. And we can manipulate that and avoid the own grief in our own life and whatever. But I think that is what is so attractive and what has always brought us to these things is when I see heroism and joy within a book, within a movie, mm-hmm. it inspires me. It gives me a good to pursue. But also when I see pain and hurt and despair, like I'm able to relate to that.
Yeah.
In some way, it's almost acting out these emotions for us and making it almost understandable if it's done well and discussed well and understood well.
Yeah. And I think the thought of rereading a book for people, like just getting through it once, right, is a daunting task. But I encourage people to flip through books that they've done before, or especially if they've annotated, like we have copies of books that we return to often for class, but also in prayer. But even when we were talking earlier, you referenced to the scriptures, right? Mm-hmm. You may have heard the same scripture verse or story from the Bible 15 times every year if you're grade school, right? The parable. But I mean, when you go back 10, 15 years later, with this life experience or this unique stage of your life or this hurt or this joy, mm-hmm. to rest with the scripture then is, again, it's a living text that remains and continues to speak to you, and it will do so in a unique way. And the same type of thing exists within literature itself.
Yeah. I think the two tips that I wanted to comment from this or challenge, number one, I think would have to do with the scriptures, because that's something I was thinking of and something I've wanted to talk about. I think revisiting the scriptures throughout the years, there's just so much more each time I get out of it. Mm-hmm. And I think in college it was the tendency of to overstudy and to overanalyze and to read all the commentary on it and whatever. But just like you said, we have so many different lenses now to look through, to see it in the eyes of a father, to see it in the eyes of a son, a brother, a friend, whatever, into I don't know, get so much out of these things, because Jesus even tells his apostles, you're not going to know this until the Son of Man is raised. I'm even telling you these parables now and you don't get what I'm saying. But like, I think you look at the fruit of John's gospel that comes after 50 years of him reflecting on, you know, Christ's life and what he did in his ministry. And that's why it is so inherently different, I feel like, than the others. And he, I mean, obviously he has different intentions, but mm-hmm. you can see like the, I don't know, the consolidation of his thought.
Yeah.
Is that story of him when people would go visit him in his ancient years and he would just be like, love each other, please. Like,
right.
Because he's reflected so much and he can see it through a clear lens.
Yeah.
So I think revisit the scriptures. Like, there's so much depth there that don't be that condescending person. It's like, I've heard this parable so many times. Hmm. That's my first one. Would you want to add to that? The second one would be to work through, name what is going on in your life, like work through it and get it out there.
Yeah.
We are, I think what I was getting on was as I'm reading this book, I'm processing a lot of what they're going on and I'm relating it to my own humanity. I'm relating it to what I see with my family, my friends, my students. And my wife and I think are doing a very good job of like trying to communicate and work through things together as a family in our vocation and within our marriage, within our parenting. If I don't name these things, it's hard for us to move anywhere. In prayer, if I'm not naming and bringing these things up and I'm just going through the motions with God, I'm not getting anywhere within my prayer. When we work through and process things through prayer, through the sacrament of confession, spiritual direction, through a community of a small group, through journaling, whatever, when we name what's going on, we can see what we can control, what we can't control,
mm-hmm.
right? What we're struggling with, and it becomes more real, understandable, fixable with grace, with persistence, with community, etc. So I think number one is to realize that the things can keep adapting and bringing more to you as you go back and revisit it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is like, you need to work through these and get them out there. Like it is very therapeutic and helpful to name these things, to experience these things, to feel these things.
Yeah.
I don't know if that, any of that.
No, that made perfect sense.
Okay.
I don't want to add too much onto it. Cause I think, yeah, I think that is sage advice. That is, unfortunately, far too often ignored, right? We're feeling things and we're anxious and we're struggling, but we don't have a place to rest with it and sort through it. Or we're not, you know, we're just either suppressing it or distracted by something else, but it still remains there and it festers and it's unfortunate. So again, we've talked about multiple times the importance of community, the importance of prayer. But again, I think, gosh, those brothers Karamazov is such a beautiful story that speaks to the depth and the dimensions of humanity. And I just cannot encourage people enough to pick up a book of fiction, a classic. It doesn't have to be a 1200 page, you know, epic like this, but to allow that to also help them mine the depths of their own humanity and to name these things and relate to these things that are ever present, but often ignored to our own detriment.
The thing, yeah, those are my points. I just want to go back really quick. The fascinating thing about the Karamazovs is that all of them are struggling with these like sensualist things or whatever in their own way. But what is so like clear is that they are seeking something more. So yeah, they all have a lot of these negative sins that they're attached to. Mm-hmm. But like, I think I was telling you, like when Fyodor is like drinking his glass of brandy, all he's thinking about is the next glass of brandy. Like it's showing this deeper desire that he's always wanting more. And he's on that like right step. Like one right. little glimpse of grace changes that desire to keep getting more alcohol, to get drunker, to get another woman, to whatever, to get more money. Like it just takes a simple redirection of that seeking is seeking something bigger.
Right.
And that's like in all of them. Like Ivan's attack on everything, like I said, is a glimpse into him just like, please somebody give me these answers that I'm seeking. Mm-hmm. He's not just trying to tear everyone down. He literally just needs to know this. And maybe I'm wrong in that assessment of it.
No, because I think, yeah, if you just like get a snapshot picture, like what a mess, right? All four of these are just horrendous human beings, but none of them is lost.
No.
None of them are lost. And all of them are seeing glimpses of this, the beauty or the grace that's breaking through. And they have these moments of clashing together and in solitude where it's like, you can definitely tell that they are still on the search. They desire something more. And that none of them is lost, even in some of the worst of times. Yeah.
And that's what I love seeing in the students. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I remind myself when I see that student who is like struggling or far away or just like troublemaker. They think they're hilarious. Like there's so much there within them
they're not lost. Like, they have a lot of good qualities. They're just like misled in that moment.
Right. Yeah. And to have an appreciation of the depth of what's the lives that they've lived that we never get to see.
Yeah.
And
there's so much more why they're acting this way and bringing right. this to us. Yes. Cool.
Beautiful. Thanks for sharing.
Hopefully
that.
Something made sense. But...
Oh yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Any shout outs? Oh, I just want to shout out, Matt Johnson sent it over to Miami to see Teddy Johnson.
Oh, nice.
So excited for them. I think some of the family's going to
Miami,
visit, so.
Ohio.
There's only one Miami.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't need to clarify that, I guess.
And, yeah. So shout out to them. Hope they have a great weekend this weekend.
Shout out to Isaac Sanders. He sent us an email about Henry Nouwen.
Oh, so nice.
Thank you, Isaac.
That is just correcting your pronunciation or?
No, there's a book that he recommended that I actually checked out from the library, but I haven't started yet.
Awesome. Thanks, Isaac.
Yeah. Cool.
For the kingdom.
For the kingdom.